Our service is focusing on how civic engagement is the lifeblood of democracy, and it is essential for our survival. In this part of the service, we're going to feature some congregational participation. That means you. Look around. Yes, you. We have with us today, on top of our normal people, some voices, familiar voices, who are going to rise and speak to us about their thoughts on civic engagement. Let me think. I believe Plato's here. Plato, do you have something you want to share with us this morning?
One of the penalties for refusing to participate in politics is that you end up being governed by your inferiors.
A voice from our past, President Ronald Reagan. Are you with us this morning? There we go, President Reagan.
The objective I propose is quite simple to state: to foster the infrastructure of democracy, the system of a free press, unions, political parties, universities, which allows a people to choose their own way, to develop their own culture, to reconcile their own differences through peaceful means.
Thank you, President Reagan. Wendell Berry, I believe Wendell Berry's here, okay?
The great enemy of freedom is the alignment of political power with wealth. This alignment destroys the commonwealth, and so destroys democracy, of which the commonwealth is the foundation and practical means.
One of our more contemporaries here, John Stewart. I believe John Stewart is here with something to share with us today.
You have to remember one thing about the will of the people. It wasn't that long ago that we were swept away by the Macarena.
Too true. President Lincoln, I believe you have some words to that.
We are not enemies, but friends. We must not be enemies. Though passion may have strained, it must not break our bonds of affection. The mystic cords of memory stretching from every battlefield and patriot grave to every living heart and hearthstone all over this broad land will yet swell the chorus of the Union. When again touched, as surely they will be, by the better angels of our nature.
Wow, that's good stuff.
Those are all good words. But what about my experience and my voice? Those words were all from men.
White men.
Yes.
Well, that's got to change. Silence has not been women's friend. It's time for us to believe in the power of our voices and our capacity to make change.
You know, that's true, Linda, and we have to keep in mind that women and non-white people have always spoken out, but it's like, I can't hear you. One of the women who did speak out, an American hero, is Fannie Lou Hamer, who practiced her civic responsibility by registering people to vote in Mississippi. And ironically, this morning, Jennifer nearly quoted her, because after Fannie Lou was fired, beaten, and jailed for practicing her civic responsibility, she said, I am sick and tired of being sick and tired. But she also had some words about our Constitution. This is what she said. With the people, for the people, by the people. I crack up when I hear it. I say, with the handful, for the handful, by the handful, because that's what really happens. But this woman who was born on a plantation in Mississippi and who was picking cotton as a child, unlike this president who is a nationalist, she was a globalist. And this is what she had to say. People have got to get together and work together. I'm tired of the kind of oppression that white people have inflicted on us and are still trying to inflict. One day I know the struggle will change. There's got to be a change, not only for Mississippi, not only for the people in the United States, but but for people all over the world.
Nevertheless,
thank you.
She
persisted.
I ask you now to get comfortable and join me in a moment of silence as I speak these words from John Hollow Horn, who is an Ogallala Lakota Indian. Someday the earth will weep. She will beg for her life. She will cry with tears of blood. You will make a choice. If you help her or let her die. And when she dies, you too will die. A moment of silence. Amen. Blessed be. Look around. I mean it. Look around. There are a lot of people in this congregation engaged in the work we all must share if we are to live, if our democracy is to live. For some inspiration, I'm going to call upon a couple people in our congregation to share how they are engaged. And then we're going to give you an opportunity to tell us how you are engaged or how you plan to be engaged. I'm going to ask Dirk Bender to come forward first.
That's what I'm supposed to talk about, how I'm engaged? No, I had a whole other speech prepared, but that's okay. No, seriously, what I do, I want to share first and foremost how I got myself engaged, and I don't think any of you need this because you're all incredibly, you know, conscientious and you don't need any kind of dumb negative reinforcement. I, on the other hand, generally need to bang myself with a 2x4 to get myself to do stuff. And what got me engaged this last time around was thinking about a really important date that's coming up. What's the really important date that you can think of this week? What's the important day? November 6th, Tuesday, right? And a birthday too, right? You should just do it. You should just do it for Shelley's birthday. But seriously, though, for me, my motivator is not Tuesday. It's Wednesday. It's all those Wednesdays that I've gotten up. Maybe I woke up or maybe I was still awake. And the results came in, and they were not what I wanted. And I was incredibly unhappy and depressed. I'm sure that's never happened to anyone here, but it has happened to me a couple of times. And what I started thinking of this election cycle was, how am I going to feel on Wednesday if I haven't gotten that 2x4 out and whopped myself on the head and said, okay, go do what you can do. So I did. I mean, I latched onto a particular candidate, but it doesn't really matter so much which candidate, just if it's something that you believe in, you know, and if you have the wherewithal, the physical ability and the inclination to go out and canvass. I did that. Get out there and phone bank. You can do that. Think about Wednesday, not so much Tuesday. Think about how you'll feel if you didn't go out and do that. And I'm offering those words not so much, again, for the people here, but the people that you know who maybe are still thinking, gosh, you know, I don't know how this is going to turn out. You're fully justified in asking them, well, how are you going to feel on Wednesday? You know, do you feel like you did what you could? If not, you know, there's still stuff that you can do. Every single campaign out there needs volunteers still. Everyone needs people to canvass on Monday. Actually, they need them today. They need people to phone bank today and to canvass today. And if all you can do really is bring a case of water for the post-election election watch party that they're having at the candidate's headquarters, you know, volunteer to do that. Again, I'm not saying you, but friends of yours. You know? So that's all I have to share. Thanks.
I'm an electric speaker, clearly. Don Gross, come join us.
in these times, I'm also reminded of some other words from Lincoln. No foreign foe will ever drink from the banks of the Ohio. If despotism comes, it will come from within. After the 2016 election, I said that I will have to learn to live in a country that has lost its mind. But actually, it was the 2014 midterms that brought us to this present state of affairs. The voter turnout for the 2014 midterms was 25%. Only one in four eligible voters bothered to vote. And the election of 2016 was still a dismal 58% turnout. Now, what this shows is there are a lot of voters who will turn out for the presidential elections but won't even bother to vote during the midterms. And the midterms can have as much or greater impact on our national life as the presidential elections. So irregular voters are definitely a problem in our political process. There's an organization called Vote Forward that's an independent organization that was formed to address this issue. By logging into their website, after a short vetting process, you can adopt a list of irregular voters and that you will commit to sending a short letter and a personal note to these people on why your vote is important. It's a short form letter. And the voters that you adopt are unique to you, which means that no one else, they will not be getting multiple letters. They will be getting your letter. And it's important that these notes be handwritten, including the address, because this makes the letters personal, and otherwise, if they're neatly typed and all, they think this is just a mass mailing, a machine-driven mass mailing, and won't have the same effect. The studies of the Vote Forward indicate these letters are highly effective. So I signed on to do five of these letters. The campaign rhetoric heated up, then I committed to 20. Campaign rhetoric kept heating up, so I committed to doing 50. And I mailed 50 of my letters on October the 30th. That's the date that they wanted these letters mailed, because if they get to the recipient just before election, they're much more effective. So the tally is that there were over 1 million of these letters generated that have been sent out. Now you think about that, 1 million letters, if only 1% of these letters and charged people to vote, then they responded to that they otherwise were not voted, that's 10,000 votes. So the contents of the letter that I sent out is this. I have pledged to vote in every election because I have known the blessings of living in a free republic for my 80 years. I am appalled at the danger we face because of voter apathy. Please make every effort to vote on November the 6th. This will be the most important election in my lifetime. Thank you.
So it's your turn. We got some rules here, and I'm going to ask some of us who will reach back, and we'll get this, and you'll have to help some of the youngers. Think Phil Donahue. If you have something to say, raise your hand. We'll bring you the microphone. Please limit your remarks as short as possible, and we're going to have a limited number of remarks, unfortunately, but I encourage you when you go off to coffee hour to continue the conversation amongst yourselves. So who would like to speak?
I'm Rich Adams. I live in a very conservative neighborhood, conservative not in the old way, but in the great Georgia way. And I came to realize this summer that changing the prism that bigots look through is very unlikely. To not open to that discussion. So I decided to take it on myself to go out and find the people who could change things. And my message to them was, you can't change a bigot, but you can disempower them. And I stopped and talked to every single person with a complexion darker than mine, well over 50. Some of them weren't registered to vote, a good number weren't. And I told them how to get themselves registered on the Fulton County voter registration, Google it or whatever. A number of them said they would, who knows what they actually will do. And those who were registered, probably not gonna change their mind whether they go and vote or who they're gonna vote for, but even as a 1% or 2% said, if you do, that could make the difference. The response by people, I'd say 50% were very positive. One woman got totally carried away, could hardly turn her off with her telling me what had to happen. And probably only one or two of the people I talked to actually were angry or annoyed that I intruded into their space. Hopefully it has an impact. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Terry Schiff, and long before I came here, I engaged my homeowners association in a prolonged battle over whether I would get to put solar panels on my roof. And I won't go into details. It was bitter, it was long, it involved lawyers, and I won. I also, six flat tires later, and 4 years or 3 years of shunning later, I'm on the HOA board. And I am reaching out to people who disagree with me. I don't care who they vote for. I don't care about their political views. I am reaching out to these people to make them see me as someone who is a good neighbor and a good person to know. And that is how I believe I'm going to change all this.
Noel.
Voting is important. I think we all agree there, standing here. But it's also not the only thing. Tuesday, I attended one of the vigils at a local synagogue, Gashir LaTorah. I brought love and greetings from Yumen. Imam Arshad of RCM, who often works with Reverend Dave and Yumen, spoke and brought his own love and greetings. I attended Shabbos Friday night at Temple Beth Tikva and brought love and greetings from Yumen and Candler and RCM. That reaching out and going there with my, at that point, rather tattered I voted sticker is nearly as important as the vote itself, because it tells those people who need our help and our solidarity that we are here, that we love them, and that we are voting like their lives and ours depend on it.
Anyone else? Ashok. In the interest of time, I think Ashok will be our second to last speaker, because I think we have words from Willie Nelson after that. So.
I'm actually speaking for Shelley. She had to leave because she's campaigning this afternoon down by the river. But for the past several election cycles, I had never been very politically active in campaigning. But Sherry dragged me into it. Now, I'm very cognizant of the fact that I speak with an accent and my skin is brown. And so I'm received with a lot less enthusiasm at the doors that we knock on than my wife is. So I end up driving and she goes and does the knocking. But we've been doing this for several cycles and we'll continue.